Welcome to another hour of the Student Radio Association taking over in radio. We do this every week, every Friday at 1 o'clock for an hour. We basically sort of showcase some of the best stuff we've done on student radio from the past and from the recent memory as well. I'm Dom, the content officer at the SRA, and today's show is dedicated to two things. Number two, demons in space. Curious? Yeah, you should be. Sam Spence will talk through that in half an hour's time. You don't want to miss it. But first up, we're going to take a look back at last weekend's 88th Academy Awards, or better known, the Oscars. Winners of the night came from the likes of The Revenant, Spotlight, and The Room as well, a Brie Larson great film. And Student Radio aired quite a lot of great coverage of the event, previewing and offering build-up to the night as well. Now we start with URN and their film show, who speak for a bit about the night's biggest winner and one of the best films of last year, in my opinion, Mad Max Fury Road. Take a listen to this.
Although the Academy continues to court controversy with its predictability, no one can deny that the astonishing 10 nominations for the dystopian epic Mad Max Fury Road is a welcome change in pace. The latest in George Miller's Max Rokitansky franchise, the film stars Tom Hardy in the lead. He comes to the reluctant aid of Charlize Theron's Imperator Furiosa in her mission to escape the clutches of Immortan Joe, along with his five wives. The film was a huge success upon its release in May 2015, and the accolades have kept on piling up. As well as nominations for Best Picture, Director, Cinematography and Editing, it is favourite to win in multiple technical categories, particularly production design and sound, and perhaps even visual effects, especially after having dominated the technical categories at the Critics' Choice Awards and BAFTAs. But the inclusion of Mad Max in the two biggest categories of the night have drawn the most attention. Having picked up both of the London Film Critics Circle Awards and picked up crucial nominations at the Directors Guild Awards as well, it is still an outlier but will be a very popular winner on the night. Especially if George Miller finally takes home his first directing Oscar to go alongside the animated feature Oscar he won for Happy Feet.
And how exactly do we take the Citadel? Assuming we're still alive by then.
If we can block the pass, it'll be easy. All that's left are his war pups. And war boys too sick to fight.
And we'll be with Nux. He's a war boy. He'll be bringing us home, bringing back what's stolen as he's meant to.
It feels like hope.
Fury Road, I loved it. Most kick-ass movie of the year. Definitely up waiting for it to win lots of awards.
Mad Max 2 Fury Road I wasn't keen on at all, because I've never seen any of the Mad Max films previously. So I felt like when I was watching the film for the first time, I didn't really understand what was going on. I didn't understand the whole blood bank thing, but did have good special effects.
Oh, Mad Max was just nuts. Like, it was just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, Mad Max, such a popular film this year. It really surprised everyone. So I'm going to go through all of the things it's nominated for. There's quite a few. So as well as Best Picture, George Miller is up for Best Director, and he's second favourite to win after Alejandro González Iñárritu. Cinematography, again, it's second favourite after The Revenant. Favourite to win editing, costume, makeup and hair, sound mixing and sound editing. And then it's second favourite to win in visual effects after Star Wars, and favourite to win in production design. So it's pretty much going to clean up in the more technical awards.
Good.
Yeah, it is good. What did you think generally of Mad Max Fury Road?
I sort of was reserved about it because I guess in terms of the mainstream, I was familiar with all of them, and so I was probably in a rarer place than a lot of people, and so I was reserved. But loved it, and was very much surprised and happy that it
the other
sort
people
of,
loved
yeah,
it too.
Yeah, it took everyone the way it did.
Yeah, it was definitely my favourite of the Mad Max films.
Yeah.
I like 1 and 2.
What's wrong with Tina Turner?
No, that was not good. But I saw them all at about the same time. I watched the original trilogy in order to go and watch Fury Road, and yeah, it was my favourite. Although I did kind of miss the homoerotic leather stuff that they had going on, but I was willing to accept the better female representation in place of that. Yeah. Sana, what did you think of Mad Max?
It's easily my favourite Best Picture nominee. Is an excellent action film that blows every other blockbuster of the past year out of the water.
And blows cars out of the way, and people out of the way, and blows limbs off.
With these terrific characters, especially Furiosa, some spectacular effects and combat sequences, and it did an excellent job at world building. You could just, it throws you straight into the action, and you can tell that this is a world that's been lived in. I think all these elements combined result in a Mad Max film that is better than all the previous ones. George Miller's creativity and inventiveness is pretty rare to find in big budget films nowadays, so I think Fury Road deserves all the success it can get, especially tonight at the Oscars, because this may persuade studios to make more films like this, or at the very least let George Miller make more budget, big budget films, because he was rumoured to be the Star Wars Episode 9 director, but instead they got the guy who did Jurassic World.
They must already be encouraged to make more films like this because it did so well, especially for its rating. Was it an 18?
It's 15.
Still, it did amazingly for something that was not rated, for general audiences. George Miller, it might pip Alejandro González Iñárritu.
I hope so.
I want him to as well. Not sure he will.
I'd be fine with either.
Yeah, it's one of those things where for his... basically for his whole body of work, it's that sort of thing where they would nominate him for that.
Plus age, to be able to direct something so ridiculously intensive and complex. Yeah. And if you've seen the footage of them filming out in the middle of nowhere, and it's how they're thinking, how were you able to keep in mind what you were doing?
Yeah, I remember that there was a lot of real effects that were used in the production. I remember the Hateful Eight cinematographer saying that they should have a separate category for real effects, which is funny because the Hateful Eight wouldn't win it. Mad Max would win it. But yeah, it was so visceral and amazing. And actually, I've just remembered my interesting fact about Mad Max, which is that George Miller really originally wanted to do it in very deep monochrome, so lots of different greys and steels and stuff. And then they were like, no, you have to do it in colour for the wide audience. And he really did it in colour. It's so in your face and loud.
You get a rush from it. It's so... it's exuberant, it's chaos, and it makes you realise just how you give so many films a free pass for just doing things kind of well. It's so good, and all the respects you mentioned before, the kind of the world building, just the way it's edited, the way the characters are just made as characters without lots of just sitting around talking about them, just in very subtle ways. It's just, I came out of it on a rush from it.
And actually, in fact, I've only just thought of this now, which is weird because we're doing the Oscar special and I have been thinking about these films, but I haven't actually compared Mad Max and The Revenant before now. And everyone is saying how immersive and stuff The Revenant is, but Mad Max is a really full-on cinematic experience.
It does all that and much, much more. And they were still working out in the desert. It wasn't, like The Revenant were the only people putting effort into a movie this year.
It's very true, but that's probably what I was going to reflect. Yeah. But I still think it's a really, really great showing. And it means that because they're going to clean up in so many of the technicals, they're still going to be able to be, winner of seven Academy Awards or whatever, which is always a nice thing to do.
Now, one of the biggest controversies surrounding the Oscars this year, you probably saw it all over Twitter, was the diversity row. And it was dubbed hashtag... Oscar's so white. Now, some celebrities even boycotted the night. I know Will Smith wasn't there, was he? And You Are Why's film show discussed and examined why the row is happening.
This is the student radio station for York University. You Are Why.
Whether or not it's true that the Oscars are being discriminative at all, and Spike Lee, Will Smith, and Jada Pinkett Smith have all said they will be boycotting the event because of the lack of diversity among nominees. It's specifically and obviously in the acting categories. And for Best Actor, out of the 87 actors that have won the Best Actor Award, only 6 of them were non-white, as they call them. And most of them were in the years 2000 and 2010. Even more shocking, Best Actress, 87 females have won, only one of them was not white. And I think it was last year, actually, for 12 Years a Slave.
Lupita Nyong'o, I think, probably pronouncing that wrong.
She was supporting actress there.
I was just looking at some other facts as well, 10 black women have been nominated, but only one has won Oscar.
Yeah, Halle Berry. Halle Berry in 2001.
Yeah.
If anyone's in
there. And there are more than 450 members in the Academy's executive branch, but 96% of those are white and 87% are men. I definitely don't think it's a case of the films. I think in films they've definitely become more diverse, and even though some films may have more white people than others, in general it's very diverse. But certainly for the awards, there does seem to be this issue that good, well-recognised actors aren't being recognised for the Oscars, and I don't really know how else they can, that can be explained other than there is some discrimination going on. I don't know.
But I have to say, because last year Selma was nominated for Best Film, and that sort of came out of nowhere for me, because as far as I remember, I may be getting this wrong, but it wasn't nominated in any of the Best Director, Best Actors, Best Supporting Actors. It wasn't nominated for any of those categories. And for me, in my opinion at least, if you're nominated for something like that for Best Film, surely there must be very many good components. So you'd expect there to be other nominations, which made me think that maybe they were just doing it for representation value. Maybe they just thought, oh, you know, we want to please people. Yeah. Let's do that. And then maybe this year they just didn't.
Because that's what you have to be afraid of. That is it... Like, you don't want them to just do it for the sake of it. Like, you want the best films to be nominated just for the sake that they are the best films that you do. Because I don't really believe that much in, like, having a quota of a certain amount of certain types of films. But I don't know. I do think that, yeah, the Oscars can be seen as...
It was, like, we even have a hashtag, Oscars so white. But at the same time, the host is...
Yeah, exactly. That's controversial.
Chris Rock.
Actually, there was... Whoopi Goldberg said something. I don't know where she said it. But she said, boycotting doesn't work, and it is also a slap in the face to Chris Rock. Because, like you were mentioning, you have Jada Pinkett Smith, Will Smith, all these people boycotting the Oscars when one of the hosts is a person of colour. And then you sort of think, well... It just shows the lack of unity in...
Yes, what you said about Jada Pinkett Smith and her husband, do you think it's resentment for not being nominated?
Yeah. Could be.
And just making an affair and getting free promotion? Yeah. Because it will always sell. Racism will always sell.
But also, you know, you could wonder as well about Chris Rock's frame of mind in the sense that, like, we asked him to host the Oscars. It does seem like a little bit too obvious a way to fight that idea that the Oscars are discriminating. Like, let's just have the main person be a person of colour.
To be fair to Chris Rock,
then we'll be cool.
To be fair to Chris Rock, this isn't the first time he's hosted the Oscars. And they had the highest rating figures for, like, watching the Oscars was the last time that he hosted it. I mean, a lot of people said he didn't do it particularly well, but he was, you know... a lot of people watched and it was reasonably successful. So whereas there may be, there's obviously this political element to it, he has also got experience and he has attracted the crowd.
And you sort of think, you know, should he, obviously not everyone's agreeing on the matter, it's obviously quite a controversial matter, so should he do something just to appear a certain way? You know, he has a right, he has a career, he has a right to make his decisions for his career. He shouldn't necessarily just boycott something because other people are. And I think also the issue with this is that because of the controversy within the community, the black and minority ethnic community, there's limited support from the white community. And I think that's also an issue. I mean, I'm not saying that something to be valid has to have the support of white people, but it obviously shows that people in the business aren't necessarily all standing up and saying this is a real problem.
But that's the thing, like, talking about the business... you know, I've got here the list, it's on the Oscars website, of the board of governors, so people who take decisions and anything from the officers, so the presidents, vice presidents, but also of the individual branches, so actors, casting branches, cinematographers, costume, etc. And honestly, by looking at this list from top to bottom, the only person that doesn't qualify as non-black would be Mr. Okada, who's in the cinematographer's branch, Darren Okada, who, not judging a book by cover, but would seem to be Asian, but otherwise, yeah, it's just white people from...
That is something that comes from the history, isn't it? That the Hollywood was made by Jewish people who came to some time ago to America and decided to make movies, and they were so good at it that they created an empire.
Mm.
So isn't it something that will change over time, because the times change?
Yeah, I think the problem is how gradually it's changing. Yeah. If you look at how rapidly the business has changed, if you take the past 10, 15 years...
So is it changing too slow?
I think that's I think the problem is that the Academy isn't keeping up with the business and the commercial side of the business.
And should they?
Just because the commercial side of the business is doing something, should the professional academy agree with that?
I mean, looking at how many people in the academy are white and how many are different colours of skin. It's really shocking to see. Well, 96%, I think. But I mean, I'm just reading an article now and it's saying they're making attempts to diversify. Mm. Is that going to work? Like, how are they going to do that?
Is it just like, it feels like a token gesture almost at this point as well?
It's like they had to be told that, you know, to actually enact some change. It's not something they've done by themselves. They've actually had people that actually had to put pressure on them to do this.
Yeah.
And therefore, I don't see it.
Which is wrong, yeah. Yeah, they should be doing this just because it's... It shouldn't even be a decision. Right. It should just be natural.
Some brilliant stuff there from URY debating the Oscars So White controversy. It'll be interesting to see what happens next year at the Oscars and if anything does change. Now we're nearly at the end of the Oscars section of the SRA takeover of In Radio. And to conclude, we're going to go up north to Sunderland and to Spark FM, who review in depth the winner of this year's Best Picture at the Academy Awards. No, it wasn't The Revenant, it was Spotlight. Take a listen to this.
That was a track from Howard Shore's soundtrack to Spotlight, which we're going to talk about. But first, a clip. And in this clip, Liev Schreiber's just taken over at the Boston Globe. He sits down with John Slattery and Michael Keaton to find out why they're not doing enough about this investigation.
So, judging from what I've read, it doesn't seem like we've done a very thorough investigation into the Kagan case. Is that right?
No, it's not. We looked hard at Kagan. David Armstrong for Metro, Michael Paulson for Religion.
Okay, but... just so I understand, beyond our daily coverage, we haven't committed any long-term investigative resources to the question of whether or not Cardinal Law knew about this.
No, we haven't.
And that's the kind of thing your team would do?
Spotlight? Well, yeah, but we're still prospecting the Boston PD story I told you about.
Could you set that aside?
We could. Marty, in past, Spotlight's had success in large part because they picked their own projects.
Would you consider picking this one?
So Spotlight is a film that is a true story telling the story of the Pulitzer Prize winning Boston Globe paper investigation of the Spotlight team that has basically caused the massive crisis within this institution. You know, the Catholic Church is a massive presence, especially in the American states. And
well, interestingly, Tom McCarthy is sort of a Catholic.
Really?
So is Michael Keaton.
Oh,
and
there you go.
I was just listening to them this morning talking about how, you know, it was important that they... you know, did this film, they couldn't sort of shy away from it. It didn't affect them. And, you know, it was obviously difficult for them making a film about their religion, but it's an important story that needs telling.
I don't think any religion advocates this.
No.
Nothing at all.
No.
You know, but so this tells the story of the Spotlight team within the Boston Globe who are reporting the allegations of abuse within the Catholic Church. They did an investigation on it a while back, however, that was dropped sort of unceremoniously. However, now the new editor has come in, played by Liev Schreiber, who has decided that he wants to start up the investigation again because there are more allegations and more people coming out with more stories. So Spotlight are put back on the case to investigate a cover-up, perhaps, that was decades long, that has got everyone from Boston's religious, legal and government establishment, and that just everyone is involved with this. And it is an ensemble team work.
It is
absolutely an ensemble team work, because Tom McCarthy, I mean, I've been talking about the fact that would this film prove that Tom McCarthy will be a worthy Best Director picture? Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I think now that I've been ruminating on it, I do think that he would be a good shout for Best Director, because to his credit, he does let, as you mentioned when we're coming out of the cinema, he does let the story breathe, and that is extremely a big factor of why there's...
It's not particularly flashy.
Mm. No, it's not.
If it was, you'd sort of feel a bit weird about it. I think a lot of some people have said TV movie.
Yeah.
I think it's got the sort of heft and weight of this and the sort of cinematic feel of it, because it's such a big impact on the story. Mm. Like, you know, the story has such a big impact. It'll work on TV when it gets there.
To its extreme benefit, Tom McCarthy makes sure that everyone is kept in the story at all times.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing flashy, there's nothing showy, there's nothing overly dramatic within his direction. It is all centred on the story and telling this story within the powerful actors that it has, and that, I mean, the story writes itself, essentially, isn't it? I mean, this is a story that, well, and it looks like it needed to be told, because this is, I mean, decades long, and it's frustrating and anger and certainly disgust, which all builds up, and the entire cast just works beautifully. I mean, it is a true Cirque du Soleil of brilliant actors, just the whole thing. I mean, you've got Michael Keaton as the lead of the Spotlight Spotlight team, Walter Robbie Robinson, who was sort of, I mean, it's a weathered role for Michael Keaton. You know, he's very sort of, he's prolific in what he does. He's casting an eye on everything. He is the man that's overseeing the whole thing. And then you've got his team of sort of, well, the rest of the Spotlight team. It's a four-person team with Mark Ruffalo as Michael Resenet. I can't even... Resendez. I'm sorry if I'm butchering it.
Resendez.
You've got Rachel McAdams as Sasha Pfeiffer, and then
did you apologise to Mark Resendez?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I know, but like, I don't like butchering names. We always do it. And then Brian Darcy James as Matty Carroll, and
who shouldn't be overlooked.
No, he shouldn't be overlooked at all. So that's the four-person team. And as the story develops, I think that is a big reason why I loved it so much, because you see the extent of it sort of bubble up, and like, wow, this is a massive thing that is happening, and this is, you know, it's dark and it's horrendous, but they don't play it sort of depressingly in a way that it could. It's just sort of unveiling the story upon itself, where you begin to see the extent of the absolute abominationable crimes that are within this establishment that have gone on untouched for decades, because nobody wants to address the problem as it is. And that all builds up as the actors sort of discover the story for themselves, and it is really, really sort of summed up by Mark Ruffalo's performance, which full of righteous fury and just general...
There's a lot of shots where you've got Ruffalo just sort of standing and observing. I think that's really poignant in the when Silent Night comes on.
That's sort of
montage. You've got him at the back in the church watching the kids in the choir. And some could say that's quite an obvious shot to have, but it works. I mean, with that music, the way it's played, the tone of the whole thing is... I mean, you can see he's very passionate, but the character and Ruffalo are obviously very passionate about the subject.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can see it. And then I think Mark Ruffalo, despite this absolutely being a cast that is all working together in perfect harmony, I think he stands out as the MVP of this for me.
I think Rachel McAdams as well.
Oh yeah, Rachel McAdams. And
I was sort of blown away by her sort of compassion, the way she sits down with all of the sort of, and just talks to them like a normal person. I mean, the descriptions of the activities in the film are, you know, they're pretty graphic.
And you know, and that is in a sense why it does feel like a TV movie at times, because it does let the camera sit and watch them tell their stories, and then with those momentary cutbacks to McAdams or Ruffalo as they are interviewing their people, and it lets the story speak for itself. And that is why Tom McCarthy probably does deserve a serious thing about for getting that Best Director nod, because he does let his actors breathe, and he does let the story breathe, and everyone who comes in to tell these stories, it lets you see for yourself without any over dramatisation that this is really, really bad, and this is something that has been corrupting and toxic, being toxic to the entire thing that is going on within the Catholic Church and rotting it from the core, you know. And
mine's gone red.
But no, I mean, no, I just
same colour as your shirt.
I do leave my pink shirt alone. Like, it's not one of me. I like it. It's not one. Like, it's a good casual shirt. Butchering that name. I'm sorry. I'm all over the place today. And Billy
Fury.
And then Billy Crudup's sort of awfully slimy lawyer Eric McLeish, who's just always getting in the way. And see, sort of sums up the whole thing that's going on, really. Just that everything that there's not willing to get into it, because nobody wants to sort of dig up that worm that is going along. And yeah, just it's just really, really.
This year's Best Picture nominees have got us really angry.
Oh God, they have got. I think it did genuinely make me angry that this has happened, and so many people let this go. I'm turning to Mark Ruffalo here. There you go. It's absolutely.
Could have been any of us.
But it's they will let it happen. But it's just terrific to watch. I mean, it's a strong story centered and grounded by extremely powerful performances and experienced tight direction that lets the story and the characters breathe with, well, real people breathe within themselves.
Yeah,
and it's a real accomplishment for them.
Obviously the people depicted in the film, they've all sort of spoken how they've enjoyed the film and thought it was nailed. Michael Keaton's Walter Robinson, he was just saying how he thought he got it perfect.
Yeah, you could easily have made the material baity, I suppose, but like, they don't. They make sure that you really.
It felt very true. It didn't feel Oscar bait at any point. Joe,
I respect the film mainly, of course, for its neutrality, which is for a subject like this to not be. I mean, not, there's obviously with Mark Ruffalo's character, there's like some anger towards it, but it does what journalists should do. The film itself, in the direction and the way it plays the story out, just just the facts, just everything, and it's just it's brilliantly done. Yeah, but direction wise, the only flashy shot I can kind of think of, which the only flashy shots in themselves are really important. It's the shot where one of the abused men, like when he was a boy, playing with his kid, and there's that zoom out with the church in the background and stuff like that. It's absolutely fantastic.
Uh-huh. I think when Brian Darcy James goes to the house as well, when he finds out there's one on the street.
Yeah, that and the last scene with Stanley Tucci's character is just heartbreaking.
Yeah,
absolutely heartbreaking. Even in the credits as well.
Oh yeah,
just like absolutely fantastic.
And that Silent Night scene that you speak of is just wow.
It's incredible.
Oh, it's full of incredible scenes throughout a really, really tight narrative. That it breathes so well. I love it.
Yes.
Really do.
Spotlight is a recommend.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, take deep breaths before you see it because you will get angry.
Yeah.
So that is it from this section of the Student Radio Association takeover of In Radio, looking back at last weekend's Oscars. Thanks to URY, thanks to URN, and thanks to Spark for providing clips for this week's show. Some brilliant stuff coming out, not just from them, but from other stations across the country. If you want to find out more, you can get online to our Twitter, @SRA, and we're on Facebook as well, at Student Radio Association. I am Dom, the content officer at the SRA. I will see you same time next week. But up next, as part of the Student Radio takeover of In Radio, Sam Spencer takes us through Demons in Space.